Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, do you want to talk about the Nats? They got crushed last night. I didn't watch it. It was disgusting. We're coming towards the end of baseball season. The pitchers are getting beat up like crazy.
Yeah, they're getting shelled here. I mean, they're losing to a team that is a good team, playing well, that is playing for a playoff spot right now, the last couple of nights in the Mets.
Right. 10-0.
But yeah, it was hers last night. It was Parker the night before. It's early and often, and it's ugly. And the Nats are headed towards, you know, they got, what do they have, 10 games left? 10 games left.
Something like that, yeah.
What was their over-under before the season started? Was it 71? Does that sound right?
I thought it was 68.
Was it 68? They won 71 last year. They crushed the over-under last year.
Yeah, but it was lower.
No, it was you're right. It was in the 60s. It was something in the 60s. They've probably gone over already, or do they need another win or two?
So their official record, let me pull it up. They're like hovering by it. They're right at 68, so they need one more win to hit that over, if it was 68.
Let me see if somebody's got it here.
Yeah, this is a point of conversation.
66 and a half.
Oh, they hit it then.
I'm seeing. So they're over already.
Everybody cash those tickets.
Yeah. They don't have to worry about the last 10 games. I guess the question now is, are they going to exceed what they did last year and win 71? They have the Cubs coming up this weekend. On the road, and then they play the Royals, who are in a playoff fight, and they play the Phillies to end the season. And I think at that point, the Phillies, you know, will have, I don't know if they'll dial it down because they're not going to play in that wild card round weekend, but they won't be playing for anything. I guess they could be playing for the one seed, right? They're still battling with the Dodgers for the one seed. Yeah, right. In fact, the Phillies' lead on the Dodgers is one game. So they'll be playing for, you know, potentially home field advantage and the one seed in the National League playoffs. So the Phillies will probably have something to play for. But the Cubs are kind of out of it. How many games back are they in the wild card race? Yeah, they're seven back. They don't have a shot. Remember those days back in June when the Nats were playing really well and were actually like the second wild card team? Yeah, not so much. It didn't hold up. Nobody thought it would. What else do you have?
All right, so yesterday the list of potential nominees were unveiled for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The list is stacked. There are a couple that have ties to our franchise, but the list of – this is put up by NBC Sports, by the way, because we had a discussion about this during the break of a first-time nominee versus first-time eligible. The list of first-time nominees, Kevin, is massive. There's about 16 dudes on this list, and we'll at some point go one by one because there are some interesting conversations here, but the big one is Eli Manning. He headlines this list. Of those that are eligible with Washington ties, you of course have Brian Mitchell and London Fletcher, who have been eligible prevalently, shall we say, for the past couple of years. Clinton Portis is on this list. We're trying to figure out if he's been on the list before.
I want to know, with Clinton and D. Hall, is this their, because they're not first-time eligible, clearly. They've been out of the league for more than 5 years. Are they first-time nominee? I think D'Angelo's been on the list before, but I don't know if Clinton has.
I believe D'Angelo has been on the list before. I would be stunned if Clinton hasn't, because it feels like a weird time to put him on now. Mm-hmm. Just because some of the numbers only get further and further out of reach. But also among the list of first-time nominees that does have a tie to Washington is Vernon Davis, who has now been out of the league for 5 years and at one point was one of the better tight ends in the game.
Yeah, let me just say this. D'Angelo Hall, Clinton Portis, and Vernon Davis are not going to be Hall of Famers. I'm rooting for them to be Hall of Famers. Really rooting for all three of them because I like Clinton a lot. I like D. Hall a lot. Vernon's a terp. Love Vernon, but they're not Hall of Famers. I think of the players that are on the list that have kind of Washington ties, and you said there were a lot of players, so help me if I'm missing somebody that actually has a legit shot. It's Brian Mitchell, okay? Mm-hmm. London, actually, career-wise, the longevity of his career, you can put his numbers side by side with other middle linebackers or inside linebackers that are in the Hall of Fame, but I don't think he was ever considered to be the best or this top two or three best in the league when he was playing. But You can stack his numbers. I've talked about London's case for the Hall of Fame before. I don't think he'll end up in the Hall of Fame, but you could actually make a quantitative case for it. But Brian's the one. And Devin Hester getting into the Hall of Fame this past August cleared the way and cleared the possibility for Brian to get there. Because in my opinion, Brian's got a career that is Hall of Fame worthy, but it's not comparable to Devin Hester and what Devin Hester was when he was in the game. I think Devin Hester is one of the most lethal and most feared returners in the history of the game. And to me, it was a slam dunk that Devin Hester was going to go to the Hall of Fame. But him and Hester's induction speech, bringing up Brian Mitchell, and I think he also brought up Dante Hall was the other one, I think.
It was Josh Cribbs.
Oh, it was Josh Cribbs. Yeah. Okay. So bringing up Brian first before Josh Cribbs, I think, you know, Brian still, you know, his case, we've talked about Brian so many times in terms of the case, second all-purpose yardage, you know, the gross yardage of punt return yardage and kickoff return yardage, it's so far ahead of any other returner that's ever played the game. The problem is averages. Averages and, you know, what did you think of Brian qualitatively? Brian was an excellent returner. In the league, when he was in the league, he was clearly each year, whether it was here or in Philly, he was a top five returner in the game. Was he ever the best returner in the game? Average-wise, I don't think he was. And I don't put him in that class with Devin Hester, but Hester clears the way for Brian to be a possibility. It does. And for people to take his case seriously and to look at a guy that is second to Jerry Rice and way ahead of anybody that's third. I forget who third is right now. That's escaping me. I can look it up real quickly. To take his case seriously. But that's the one, right? Am I missing somebody from the list of people with Washington ties?
Some of the other ones are reaches, like McNabb. I don't think McNabb's going to be a Hall
McNabb's
of Famer
not
anyway.
A Hall of Famer.
But listen to some of these first-time nominees. I'm going to go through the list one by one. I would say right now, just broadly looking over it, there are for sure three Hall of Famers on this first-time nominee list, one of which is historic. Eli Manning is on there. He's going to get in at some point. Not first ballot, probably. But Eli's going to get in. How about Marshawn Lynch? You think Marshawn Lynch is a Hall of Famer?
Marshawn Lynch. I don't have an answer to that.
I think he's close, but he's not one of my definitive yeses on this first-time nominee list.
Yeah. My immediate answer would be no, but I have a feeling if I look up the numbers and the performances and the Pro Bowls, et cetera, with Marshawn Lynch, I may change my mind. Like, I didn't think on first glance that Jerome Bettis was a Hall of Fame player. I'm looking at Marshawn Lynch right now. He is a 4-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, once an All-Pro first team. I guess he's going to have a case for it, right?
He'll have a case because of those Seattle years. And I do think there is some element of him being in the public eye in those years in Seattle where he was a fun player. Obviously, that matters a little bit. Not a lot of it, but a little bit. We've seen that with the T.O. thing, why he was snubbed the first time as if he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I would say Marshawn Lynch is a maybe. I will just warn you, there are a lot of like very easy definitive no's on here. Speaking of, Darren Sproles, not a chance.
No.
Not a chance. God rest his soul, Demaryius Thomas, again, not a chance.
No.
Great player for a time, but not nearly the longevity.
No.
Vernon Davis, as we mentioned.
No.
No. Delanie Walker, longtime Titan tight end.
Tight end? He's on that list? No.
No. Travis Frederick, offensive lineman.
No.
Ryan Khalil.
No.
Joe Staley. He was a maybe for me.
Say that again.
Joe Staley.
He's a possibility. I'm looking at
He's around for a while.
Many time Pro Bowler, right?
Yeah, he was around for a while, played on the 49ers for a long time.
Joe Staley was a 6-time Pro Bowler. He was a three-time All-Pro. He also made the All-2010s team. But let me just say this as I'm looking at Joe Staley, because my immediate reaction was, you know, maybe with Joe Staley, especially compared to the other names you were mentioning. But Joe Staley shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame before Joe Giacobbe.
Right.
So Joe Giacobbe was on the All-1980s team. He was, you know, debatably the best left tackle for that decade. You know, certainly one of the two or three best. So put it this way, Joe Staley was not the best left tackle of the 2010s. That honor probably goes to, you know, Trent Williams, Jason Peters, Teron Smith, etc. Right? Before you think about Joe Staley. Joe Staley was a really good player. You know, with offensive linemen, you got to go back and you got to remind yourself, because
right.
I think when we were watching the 49ers with Joe Staley, especially during those Harbaugh years, you're like, when they were really good, went to a Super Bowl, were in multiple, you know, NFC title games, it seemed like he was one of the best in the game, and he was. He was. All right, who else?
The next and final offensive line, this for me is a definitive yes, is Marshall Yanda, Baltimore Ravens guard.
He was excellent in Baltimore. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me like I'm going to pull his number.
Two-time first-team All-Pro, five-time second-team All-Pro, eight-time Pro Bowler, 2010s All-Decade team. He was probably the best guard of his era.
Yeah.
So I'd say he's a definitive yes to get in.
Well, let's get to the one that will be debated the most, Eli Manning.
Well, hold on. How about the historic one? Vinatieri is going to become the second kicker to get in.
Oh, he is.
He's first time nominee. He's the historic one. He is definitively going to get in.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No doubt. Eli is the one that everyone's going to debate.
So I've said this about Eli over the years, and when we've had these conversations, and now it's here. You know, he will definitely be in the final 15. I don't know if he's going to make it this first go round. I definitely expect Eli Manning to eventually be in the Hall of Fame, even if he isn't in this first run. You can take the Super Bowls out of it and still say that Eli Manning had a numbers career that was really, really impressive. Eli's, you know, top 10 in passing yards and touchdowns all time. This is a dude that during his 16-year career never missed a game with injury. Never. He has a bunch of those fourth quarter and overtime comeback drives during his career. And then you throw on top of it, you throw in the two Super Bowls for, you know, the Patriots. He was a multi-time Pro Bowler. I'm pulling it up right now because people seem to think that, I think sometimes when you talk about Eli, people just say, well, it's, you know, it's two playoff years and that's it. He was a four-time Pro Bowler. But it wasn't just, by the way, the Super Bowls. He played great in a lot of postseason games leading up to the Super Bowl, like those games in Green Bay. You know, the NFC Championship game in Green Bay, you know, that would have been 2007, the one where it went to overtime and you had, you know, icicles hanging on, you know, hanging off of Coughlin's nose. Brett Favre, I think, threw the pick in overtime that set up the game-winning field goal. He was outstanding in that game. They went to Green Bay again. He threw for like 300-plus and won at Lambeau. Here, I've got his game log as a playoff quarterback up in front of me. 8-4 as a starter, over 60% completion, 2,815 yards, 18 TDs to 9 interceptions. But just remembering some of these games. So he lost his first two playoff games to Carolina and Philly. And then in 2007, beat Tampa on the road, all right, with an outstanding game, beat Dallas on the road, played well in that game, beat Green Bay. That was the NFC Championship game in the frigid cold at Lambeau, and then played well and threw the game-winning touchdown pass against the Patriots. Then he lost to Philly. Then in 2012, they beat Atlanta at home, beat Green Bay on the road, beat San Francisco on the road. That was actually a fumble, if I recall, in overtime, right? That set up the game-winning field goal there, and then beat the Patriots. his best playoff games were in the two Super Bowl runs, but keep in mind, during those two Super Bowl runs, they won five times on the road to get to those Super Bowls. 2007, on the road at Tampa, on the road at Dallas, on the road at Lambeau to get to that Super Bowl against New England. 2012, at Green Bay, at San Francisco. In 2011, six touchdowns, one pick. In 2011, the 2011 playoffs, he was nine touchdowns, one pick in the postseason. He was a really good postseason quarterback in addition to being a guy that won two Super Bowls. Because let's face it, that first Super Bowl and even the second one to a certain degree was just as much about the Giant defense, if not more, than Eli Manning. But getting to the playoff, to the Super Bowl was about Eli Manning a lot of the time. Eli's in the Hall of Fame. The only question is whether or not it's first ballot. That's the only question. You know, the debate, and it's going to, you know, Philip Rivers is going to have a similar kind of conversation when he's eligible. When is he eligible, by the way? Is it next year or the year after?
I believe it's next year.
The difference is that Rivers, I think most would say, based on watching, was a better quarterback than Eli Manning without the postseason accomplishment. I think they're both in the Hall of Fame. I would bet that Eli's got a slightly better chance of getting in first ballot than Rivers does. But it's close on first ballot for both of them. They're both going to end up. What do you think? I mean, I don't think this is even a question. Eli Manning's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
He'll definitely be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he'll be first ballot, but I do think he gets into the Hall of Fame.
Eli had some good seasons, man. He had some seasons where he was way up there. I mean, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 4,000-yard-plus seasons. In 2011, he had a near 5,000-yard season. And Eli, let me just look at the fourth quarter comeback stuff, because I think that that's a big part of what he did. I thought many times Eli was a clutch quarterback. I'll find those somewhere. What else?
How about John Gruden, interested in returning to coaching in college?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't gone down that path already, but, you know, he's been, you know, kind of fighting the league.
He's fighting a lawsuit. He got some things to handle first.
Yeah. Look, John Gruden can flat out coach, and he can really coach, you know, quarterbacks and offense. So I have no problem if he ends up back in coaching. Do you think it would be controversial for a big-time school to hire John Gruden after the letters and the emails and the whole thing? I don't.
Maybe for like 3 days or something like that. I think if you're throwing enough money around and you're convincing boosters that he can coach, they're not going to care.
Right. By the way, I just wanted to look this up. So Eli's 10th all-time passing yards. Philip Rivers is 6th all-time passing yards. When is Roethlisberger eligible? Is he eligible same year as Rivers?
You know, Ben might be eligible this next year, and Philip might be eligible in 27.
Roethlisberger's a Hall of Fame quarterback. That's easy.
Yeah, multiple Super Bowls. Yeah, big numbers, yeah. Definitely.
You know who's going to be an interesting case when he retires? No, I'm not about to say Kirk Cousins. I'll save that question for Charge next. I think Matt Stafford's going to be an interesting conversation. And I think Matt Ryan is an interesting conversation. I think the two Matts of, you know, the late 2000s and the 2010s, there's definitely a numbers case to be made for both of them.
I think for them, it's just what do you consider more impressive or more worthy of Hall of Fame status, a Super Bowl or an MVP? I would lean for an individual player that an MVP is probably a little bit more important. I think Matt Ryan gets it.
I think I agree with you on that. I mean, I bet a lot of people disagree, but I would agree with you on that because I think it's such a dependent position that things happen when you get to the postseason. And Matt Ryan was a legit MVP. But Matt Stafford, was he ever close in MVP voting at any point? Even, I'm going to assume not in Detroit, although they had a couple of years where they were a playoff team. I bet he was close in MVP voting at some point.
Let me see if I can look this up now. So
his
first year in LA, he finished eighth. It's the only time he has been top 10 in MVP voting.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
He had a couple 5,000 yard seasons though in Detroit.
Oh, I know he did. That's why I was thinking that he perhaps was on the list. He's got a comeback player of the year. That in his third season after he got hurt, remember, in the second year of his career. Man, that team is really in trouble, the Rams, this year. Sucks for him. But they have been decimated here early in the season with injuries, and they're about to fall to 0-3, more likely than not. All right, let's get to Charge next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Charch is with us, as he is every Thursday, in this spot at Paul Charchian on X, on Twitter. You can listen to his excellent podcasting ability with Fantasy Football Weekly and Chop. Real quickly, before we get to some fantasy talk, Eli Manning, first ballot or after that?
I'd like him to be after that. I acknowledge that it's going to happen because when you win Super Bowls, it happens. But, man, he's just not at the level of most of the other quarterbacks that were in over the totality of his play. And I don't like that the Hall of Fame is just so slanted to Super Bowl victories that guys like Lynn Swann and John Stallworth are in when they have no business being in the Hall of Fame. And I don't care for it. I acknowledge he's going to get in. I hope it's not first ballot because I don't think he was requisite of that. First ballot should be people that, you know, Tom Brady should be a first ballot quarterback, obviously. You know, it just I'm not there. Do you feel differently than I do on this?
I think he's definitely getting in. I actually think there's a pretty good case for him. He had some outstanding regular seasons, but beyond that, I know it's two playoff runs in particular, but I think what gets overlooked, and I talked about Charch in the last segment, is he wasn't just good in the Super Bowl games. I mean, he won five road playoff games in 2007, 2011, including, you know, winning at Lambeau twice, and he was outstanding in the postseason games on the way to winning a Super Bowl. In fact, the Super Bowl, really, the first one in particular, was much more about Justin Tuck and Human Yura and Strahan than it was about Eli Manning.
For sure.
But I think, you know, Philip Rivers and Eli Manning came in together. I personally think Philip Rivers was a better NFL quarterback, but he doesn't have that postseason accomplishment. I think they'll both be in. We were talking about this also. The next conversation will be Matt Ryan and then eventually Matt Stafford.
Stafford's getting in. Stafford's going to get in. He's got the Super Bowl, and he's got, you know, just the huge stats and the longevity. I'm confident Stafford gets in. Ryan's trickier. You know, obviously, got Super Bowl, nearly won a Super Bowl. But, man, I don't know. When the Commanders, then Redskins, faced the Falcons, we were like, oh, my God, we can't win. Here comes Matt Ryan.
I don't think so. I think that's a really good way to kind of describe your thought about them when they were playing. Because, you know, some of these guys that are getting into the Hall of Fame, they've got numbers, they've got Pro Bowls. But did we ever think in the moment they were one of the best three or four in the game?
Right.
You know, we have that conversation about Brian Mitchell here. You know, he's number two charge all time, all purpose yardage behind Jerry Rice. Was he ever the best? I'm sorry?
He's got to get in. At some point, I think.
Devin Hester, I think, has cleared the way for a much more serious conversation about Brian Mitchell. But Hester had to get in before B. Mitch because Hester was clearly the best returner every single year he was in the league. And I don't know that you could say that about Brian. He was top three, top four, top five, but he was never clearly the best. He just has an incredible aggregate accumulated yardage number. you know,
and longevity, which, you know, and longevity should be a factor in this as well. You know, for me, the non-objective criteria to get in the Hall of Fame is, did opposing teams have to stop you to win? You know, were they game planning to stop you to win? And that to me tells me, you know, what kind of player you were. When, again, this is sort of a ludicrous example, but Randy Moss was on the field, your defensive game plan was, how the hell do we stop Randy Moss? I mean, yeah. that was like priority number one. And if you weren't that guy, you shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. If the opposing teams weren't scheming specifically to stop you, I don't think you're good enough to get in.
Yeah, I mean, your point about, you know, Stallworth and Swan, which kicked this off. Stallworth, no one was ever game planning for him. They were game planning for Swan. Swan just, his career was obviously shortened with all of the injuries, the head injuries in particular. I guess there are a lot of people in the Hall of Fame, offensive players, that defensive coordinators didn't, you know, lose major sleep over in terms of game planning. And maybe Matt Ryan would be one of them, given the weapons they had, given the OC. I mean, Denton made the point, do you put more value on a guy that had an MVP season or a guy that ended up, in Eli's case, winning two Super Bowls and was never really close to an MVP season?
Right. Well, okay. Well, let's pivot this conversation to Lamar Jackson, who has two MVPs. If he never gets farther in the playoffs than where he's gotten now,
Hall of Famer.
You think he'd get in?
Yes.
Yes. Maybe. Because
my answer to what Denton proposed is, I think an MVP season says even more. It's just such a dependent position. You get into the postseason, things happen. But over 16 games, over 17 now, you win two MVPs. You were the best in the sport for two straight years. Or for 2 years. Yeah. That's Hall
Which
of Fame.
Says a lot. But, you know, probably yes. It's probably enough right there. But not, I don't know if it's necessarily enough when people, you know, the expectation is that you make it to a Super Bowl. I mean, people want that. I don't know that we've got it here.
I know. Yeah. I think the quarterback Super Bowl thing, it's fun. But it's not equal to the NBA player that doesn't have the title. They're so much more impactful on the results because they play both ends, and a quarterback's out there only half the time.
Right. I mean, take Philip Rivers. Is it Philip Rivers' fault that the Chargers never got to the Super Bowl or got farther in the playoffs? Hell no. It was, you know, you had LaDainian Tomlinson and putting up MVP seasons. That his offenses were periodically awesome. And the defenses were never good enough. It was to me, it was never Philip Rivers' shortcoming that they didn't get to the Super Bowl, but will it be held against him? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he'll be in, though. And I bet you both Ryan and Stafford will both end up finding their way in, too. All right, let's talk some fantasy football. First of all, quick personal question. What did Tyreek Hill go for in our league?
Oh, well, good question. And I can pull that up shortly here. Let me just quick pivot to our media league here. You know he was available, right?
I bid on him.
Free because
I
you
bid
did.
On him.
Okay. Yeah. Which am I looking at the wrong league? I thought you were in the media league. Maybe you're in my odds and ends
league.
He went for $276 out of $1,000, which, that's a quarter of your whole season-long bankroll to get Tyreek Hill. Do you remember what you had bid for him?
Yeah, I think I bid $75.
Yeah, that's reasonable, and you're not desperate is probably why.
Well, I'm kind of desperate. I mean, I also bid on Josh Jacobs. So what did he go for?
Let me just see here. I just pivoted away from that page. Jacobs went for $201.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot. That's
really?
A lot. Yeah. And, you know, my team in this league is in trouble due to injury, and I put in some pretty big bids, which I don't normally do just out of desperation, and I didn't get any of them.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk fantasy football, and let's start with Thursday night. I mean, how about Stevenson? By the way, Antonio Gibson had a big week last week for New England. But does Ramondre Stevenson, the way he has started off, does it continue tonight against that Jet defense that has given up a lot on the ground?
I love Ramondre Stevenson. He is great, and nobody notices because in the preseason, we all decided that the Patriots were a garbage team, and we just basically wrote them off. since then, Patriots have an upset win and an overtime loss. They have looked way better than anybody expected. And let me, I know that you're cool with some stat porn, so let me give you some.
Okay.
Among starting runners, Ramondre Stevenson, sixth in yards after contact at almost 4 yards. He's fourth in runs of 10 or more yards. He's had six already. Ramondre Stevenson is number one in forced missed tackles. And here comes the Jets. They've given up the second most missed tackles in the NFL, 19 already. They're going to pound Ramondre Stevenson tonight. And, of course, the Jets have got an awesome pass defense led by Sauce Gardner. The path of least resistance is on the ground anyway. Jets got bulldozed by Jordan Mason in week one, 147 yards. And then the lackluster stylings of Tony Pollard last week against the Jets. He rolled up 102 total yards. I can't bet in Minnesota, but you can bet there. And the over-under for Ramondre Stevenson is only 64.5 yards.
Wow. But Gibson got a bunch of carries last week, too. By the way, you know, and we talked about this before week one, and I told you I think Brian Robinson Jr. is going to be a bit of a sleeper this year, and that he's going to have a big year rushing yards-wise. He's fifth in total yards after contact. Stevenson is two behind Dobbins. Brian Robinson Jr., fifth in the league.
I battled you when we had this conversation in the preseason. You said it was going to be Robinson that was going to have, like, breakout year. I said I thought Austin Eckler was sitting on a really nice year. And you did, too. We were both right about Eckler. Yeah. Here's the thing about Robinson. He looks like a different guy. He is leaner, stronger. He's got this extra level of energy and power that we just did not see the last couple of years. So I rolled into this year and I'm like, look, the guy we saw was not requisite of a starting NFL running back. I love the version of Brian Robinson we're getting now. And I'm telling you, he is different than the guy that we saw before. And whatever changes they've made to sculpt his body, the frame, he just looks like a different, better runner. I'm impressed.
I don't know about that. You might be right about that. Here's the big difference. Last year, they didn't try to run the ball. This year, they're going to, and they've got a dual threat attack, which always benefits the running backs in the game. We've seen it over the years, whether it's the Baltimore running backs, the Philly running backs. It started in 2012 with Alfred Morris, you know, rushing for a franchise record that year because RG3 was a run threat. The same thing exists here. And B-Rob, as we call him around here, he's been a load since he was a rookie. I mean, he can do it. He just hasn't had, I don't think, enough opportunities.
I disagree with the guy that we saw before who could not punch in balls from the 1 yard line, the 2 yard line. He wanted to be a power back that he didn't have. He just didn't have the power for. But anyway, we digress.
What does Andy Dalton bring to Carolina? I'm just curious if you think that it makes any difference whatsoever.
I mean, the easy answer is to just go, well, no, it's not going to make any difference. He's Andy Dalton, but I'm going to try to make a case here, and you tell me if you're buying into Dalton materially helping this passing game. Dalton had one start last year for Carolina. In that start, he threw 58 passes for 361 yards and two scores. Raiders are favored by 7, so the game script is likely to be pass heavy in this game. Then there's this: head coach Dave Canales couldn't fix Bryce Young, at least not through two games. But Dalton really fits his model better. He revitalizes veteran quarterbacks who other teams have given up on, like Baker Mayfield and Geno Smith. And this is perfect for Andy Dalton. And I think you could even go so far as to potentially start Diontae Johnson and Adam Thielen in this game, if only for garbage time stat padding, which is probably coming here. The Raiders ranked 29th in pass coverage by Pro Football Focus. They ranked dead last in tackling. There's a real angle here where, just through sheer repetition, Andy Dalton brings at least fantasy relevance to the Carolina passing game. And I would not be surprised if he ends up being quasi-successful here and that that he does not relinquish this job to Bryce Young for a very long time and maybe not at all this year.
Yeah, I mean, just because everybody thinks it won't happen, it wouldn't surprise me if Andy Dalton has a big day in a competitive game. at Vegas because the entire world will think Vegas is going to win just like they thought Cincinnati would in week one and Baltimore would last
in week. Week two. Now, you know about the circa $1 million, you know, millionaire bloodbath thing,
gone.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 70, more like 77%, something like that. Yes.
Maybe after Monday night with Atlanta's win, with our boy getting it done on the final drive. Mm-hmm. By the way, he never comes through in the clutch. I can't believe he did that. sarcasm.
Kirk, you mean? Yeah, right, exactly. You know, remember the 13-win season the Vikings had 2 years ago, and all Kirk did was rally his team to upset wins at the ends of games?
We both know that. People don't know that. Let's just keep it a secret because they get upset when I talk about Kirk Cousins. The rookie quarterbacks, it's obvious, right? If you've got one, it's Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, it's it has not come together really at all for Caleb Williams to this point. And Jaden's looked, I think Jaden's looked good. He's turned into an absolute every week fantasy starter, which we love. The designed runs are helping a ton. Love Zach Ertz being a big part of this offense. Can we get a wide receiver going? Is it too much to ask? Because we're wasting reps on Terry McLaurin's career right now. Let's see if we can get a little something cooking there. And you need a second receiver right now. But other than that, I'm really happy with him. Caleb Williams, on the other hand, whew, you want to hear some comparative stats for Caleb Williams. His completions have been almost entirely quick read first read quick passes on passes of more than 9 yards. Caleb Williams has a completion rate of 22%. His 3 net yards per pass is the worst for any quarterback to open a season in a decade. That's how bad it is for Caleb Williams right now. There are some angles for which make me think that he might break out a little bit against the Colts. Their defense is all banged up with injury, and that might ultimately help him here. Indy just let Malik Willis complete 88% of his passes. So maybe there's an angle here, but in the extremely small sample size of Caleb Williams, number one, versus Jaden Daniels, number two, it's clearly Jaden Daniels right now.
All right. Last one, 'cause I know you got to roll with Tua out in Miami. If you have Waddle, you have Tariq Hill, what do you do with them if Skylar Thompson's the starting quarterback?
Now, we've seen Skylar Thompson enough times because Tua keeps getting knocked out of games where we've seen 5 games in which Skylar Thompson has thrown 10 or more passes. So we've got a little bit of data to go on. In those games, Tyreek Hill drops down to an average finish of wide receiver 32, and Waddle drops down to wide receiver 41. Now, in fairness to Skylar, he's getting dropped cold into these games when Tua gets knocked out. You know, now he gets a full week of designed play around what he does. And the one thing he does bring to the game is a big arm. So he can still connect on those signature long passes to Tyreek Hill, or maybe you just do bubble screens to Tyreek and just hope he does something special, which he could do. So for me, from a fantasy standpoint, Tyreek Hill drops from an auto start to wide receiver 1 to probably a wide receiver 2, and you're still starting him. But Waddle drops into like a nebulous flex territory where you could start other guys ahead of Waddle. Like Jacoby Myers against the Panthers, to me, starts getting into the area where you're in coin flip territory with Waddle, who usually suffers when there's this change of quarterback. So, yeah, that's what I would do.
Started that playoff game in Buffalo a couple of years ago.
That's right.
It was not pretty necessarily, but if my memory serves me correctly, Miami had a chance to win that game in Buffalo.
They did. It was a surprisingly low-scoring game that people did not expect in that game. And you're right. I think Skyler did not throw a touchdown in that pass, and it was near that game only like 180 passing yards. But
here it is. I just pulled it up. Actually, it was 34-31 playoffs in Orchard Park. He was 18 of 45 for 220 yards, 1 touchdown.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
The problem was they could not run the football. They could not run it. They had Wilson Jr. The Skylar Thompson was being used as a runner, but Tariq Hill did have 7 catches for 69 yards. There you go. That was getting thrown in there at the last minute. I think he may have played the last game of the year or something. I forget how that worked out. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Always. Yeah, lots of fun. Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk next week, my friend.
Sounds good. Paul Charchian, everybody, at Paul Charchian on X on Twitter. All of our coverage this morning of NFL and anything else we've talked about is, as always, presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. We'll do NFL power rankings next. You wanted us to hold off on power rankings because you wanted to play something for me. What did you want to play for me?
All right, so we had that audio early of Stroud and Caleb Williams. Well, we also missed something yesterday. So on Monday Night Football, as you know, Drake London gets penalized for the celebration after what ends up being the game-winning touchdown. He does like a...
terrible call, I thought.
A gun-related celebration. It feels like both the NFL and college football are cracking down on that. Well, they asked Raheem Morris on his availability yesterday about that celebration, what he thought of it, did he reprimand him? Here's Raheem Morris sticking up for his guy, Drake London.
Initially, I didn't see it. And, you know, I guess it was the use of a weapon, how people interpreted that as a fine, as a penalty. And, you know, Drake he's a great kid. And his intent was not as a use of a weapon. He probably was shooting T-shirts into the stands, to be honest with you, though, because he's just that kind of a guy. But he was excited. He got excited. He's one of those guys that that plays with great energy. He immediately apologized on site before I can even get a chance to correct him.
T-shirt
guns.
Did
he really say he was probably shooting T-shirts
that
into
is,
the crowd? That's a good one.
That's a good one. That's a new one. I haven't heard of that
one
before.
That's a good one. I, in the moment, thought, I don't know, it wasn't, you know, I don't, honestly, the gun celebration, that nobody likes it, nobody wants it, I kind of get that. At the same time, I don't know the difference in the gun celebrations. You know, pulling it from your holster, cocking it, and then firing it is different from just, you know, hey, guns a-blazing, you know, whatever he was doing. I don't know. It seemed in the moment like it was a bit egregious in terms of the call. It was a bit over the top. I thought it did, but I could be wrong. Shooting T-shirts, doubt it. I doubt that's what he was doing.
Do they even do T-shirt guns at football? Like, that feels like so much more of a basketball.
That's an indoor arena thing.
Yeah, it's like a basketball, maybe hockey. If you're in college, maybe like a volleyball kind of thing. Like, you're not shooting T-shirt guns at a football game.
I don't think so. Doesn't seem like you would be. By the way, I said that I would look up, because I couldn't remember who was third on the all-purpose yardage list. Jerry Rice is one. And by the way, B. Mitch is only 216 yards short of Jerry Rice for all-time all-purpose yardage. If B. Mitch had another 217 yards of returns or of total yardage, and he was number one on that list, I think that would be even more impressive, and it would be hard to deny him now, Hall of Fame. Like, if he were in front of Jerry Rice, which he almost is. We've been saying forever, B. Mitch, second all-purpose yardage list behind Jerry Rice, and that is super impressive. But what if he were ahead of Jerry Rice? And he almost is. But Walter Payton's third on that list. But he is, you know, 1,500 yards basically behind Brian. So, you know, it's Rice and B. Mitch at the top of that list. And a lot of it is certainly, you know, longevity, no doubt. Longevity. Brian, by the way, was a Pro Bowler in his career. And this says something about why it will be tough. He was a Pro Bowler just once in his career. He wasn't All-Pro, however, three times. Twice on the second team and once in 1995, he was a first-team All-Pro selection. Funny, that wasn't even his best year, I don't think. I'm looking to see what his best year statistically was. In terms of punt return average, his best year was 94. Kickoff return, same year. Oh, no, it was the next year. But touchdowns, he had one punt return. In 94, he had two returns for touchdown. In 91, the year they won it, he had two punt returns for touchdowns. I can tell you which games they were. They were the Cincinnati game, which would have been week four, and the opener against Detroit. That year, he had a punt return for a touchdown. Anyway, that Hall of Fame conversation is always a good one. Always a good one, because we have guys that we think should be in the Hall of Fame. Joe Jacoby, for sure. 100% for sure. Brian Mitchell, debatable, but certainly, you know, you could make the case. After that, sorry, even though I had a 43 jersey when I was a kid growing up in the 70s, Larry Brown, as much as I love him, did not have a Hall of Fame career. He just did not. Gary Clark, love him. One of the greatest receivers in franchise history. Just a bit short of Hall of Fame worthiness. Although he truly was game planned for. You know, in many ways, more than Art was during that stretch of time. But yeah. Be Mitch, too. The thing about Brian, I've said this forever. I've told him this before. If you watched Brian's career, even in Philadelphia, as much in Philadelphia as here, he was big-time clutch. He played great in the season's biggest games, always. His last game here, he had a kickoff return for a touchdown in a playoff game at Tampa Bay. In Philly, he had multiple big returns in playoff games. He had a game in Minnesota where he was the up man on the punt formation. They snapped it to him. He ran 50 yards. And then in the same game, I think he had a halfback option play. He was just utilized in so many different ways because he could do so much. He also was a super smart football player, and he was clutch. You know, how much of that gets factored into the Hall of Fame discussion? I don't know. But of all the players on the list, Brian's the one with Washington ties on this big list of nominees that, you know, we can sit back and watch and see if the case, you know, it can, well, we'll make the case, but see if it gets taken, you know, beyond. I think there's a chance Brian could end up in that next semifinalist list. What is it? Doesn't it usually go one? Where is it? 167? Doesn't it usually go to 30 and then to 15 and then they vote on the 15?
Yeah. I think it goes to 30. Yeah, it definitely goes. It's a massive cut down from like 167 to a much smaller number. And they cut that number down to the 15 and then to 7 or whatever it is.
Look, the bottom line is, You can make the case why he isn't. You can make the case why he is. The case for why he is more of a longevity case, an aggregate yardage case, versus the reason you'd make the case that he isn't is that it just wasn't obvious in any given year that he was the best or even the top two or three best. Now, he wasn't All-Pro first team in 95, All-Pro second team in 94, All-Pro second team in 91. But that's just three times that he was recognized by writers, and just once was he recognized by his peers. He was only in one Pro Bowl. I actually thought he was in more than one Pro Bowl. I didn't realize it was just one Pro Bowl. But, you know, touchdowns, 13 career returns for touchdowns, that puts him way up on the list. And the yardage in terms of total yardage, he annihilates everybody on all-time, you know, combined kickoff punt return yardage. But a lot of that was because of the number of attempts, not necessarily the average. All right. NFL power rankings next.